College football fans, welcome back to the College Ball Show. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to discuss what else? College football coming off the, well, what normally is actually championship week. Usually this is the conference championship weeks. That's still 2 weeks away just because of the schedule, of course. And there's all sorts of stuff going on as far as, we know cancellations, postponement, games and all that. Of course, you can't really postpone many games now. But we know that there's some crazy stuff going on as far as who's going to make these conference championships. Are the rules going to change if someone misses this last week? Ohio State and, Michigan, if that game didn't happen, would Ohio State get in, or then would Indiana get in? But then we're going to change the rules. There's some USC Colorado stuff people are talking about. So there's just a variety of stuff that we kind of assume would happen, but especially in the Big Ten and the Pac-12, who had even shorter seasons, especially the Pac-12, talking six games, I think, is what they were scheduled to have. So that's not that many games. But however, just talking, looking at a variety of games from week 14, we definitely had some interesting stuff, man. We had some upsets, no doubt about it. We had some games that were a little bit maybe tighter than expected. Some performances out there. Indiana outperformed Wisconsin with their backup, point guard. I've been watching college basketball a little bit too lately. With their backup quarterback, which that's a really good win. And, that post game interview was really cool, seeing all his players come by and giving him love. And that was pretty cool. Also, BYU and Coastal Carolina got scheduled late in the process, which messes up game plans and all sorts of stuff. But Coastal Carolina got the job 22-17. TCU pulled an upset over Oklahoma State. That's one that we kind of had an eye on, that maybe that'll happen. Washington went down as a ranked team. Oregon went down back-to-back weeks. So we had a variety of upsets in almost. Not to mention that Friday night game, Louisiana, the Cajuns, the Raging Cajuns, are adopted a squad in Appalachian State. That freaking game was, it was crazy. 24-21 came down to the wire. But the, I couldn't believe what was going on in that game from the dude trying to snap, just the snapper, the long snapper. I mean, you can miss some snaps, of course, low, little high, you shoot it over the head. But this dude was just missing them left and right to the point where they had to run not just 5 yards, but like 30 yards into the end zone to take a safety so the punter could just punt. And they had a better shot to do that. I mean, it was the most wild stuff I've seen based off of that. And then, well, I'll get into it a little bit more, but the freaking long snapper sitting under a tent. I know it's raining, but it's like, dude, you should be long snapping right now to get your groove on. Like, you just shot three of them over the head. But anyway, I digress. We don't know, obviously, the exact rankings until tomorrow, but when you look at rank versus rank, there is a variety of those type of games. Of course, it feels like rivalry week, some of it as well, because Michigan and Ohio State, when's the last time Ohio State was favored by 29 over Michigan? That would be kind of interesting. Miami and North Carolina. North Carolina gave Notre Dame a good, push. That'll probably be ranked versus ranked. Miami's only a 3.5 favorite. Iowa, Wisconsin. Wisconsin's going to be kind of pissed coming off their loss. Cincinnati, Tulsa, something we talked about last week. That's a big game. That might be the back-to-back game because of the conference final. So there's a variety of games going on. Washington, Oregon, that probably won't be ranked versus ranked, but it'll be an interesting game. So there is, like I said, a variety of stuff to talk about. We'll get into in just a moment. If this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. It streams live at archives. But, you don't have to go to BlogTalk and Ropeadope and download the show there or listen to the browser. You can find the platform to listen to this year College Ball Show on Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, really all across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be almost everywhere, including Spotify. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. It's football, it's basketball, it's baseball, it's boxing, it's everything in between. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord or you have, you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. They do have the 7-day free trial. There's no annual contracts. Once you sign up, the plans start as low as $55 a month. You can stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR. And right now, just for signing up, you get a 30-day free trial of HBO Max. One more thing, then we'll get into some recap. If you sign up for the Max package, that will include HBO Max plus a free month of Showtime, which is normally $11. So that's AT&T TV Now. I'm going to take a sip of water and bring in my co-host, Marshall. So what's going on, Marshall? I mean, you know, on paper, it's not like we had a bunch of great, great stuff lined up per se. Some of these games we thought would tune out or tune in. Some of them would be like, well, let's see. Like I said, it's not like there was a ton of ranked versus ranked, but we still got a bunch of upsets. BYU went down, but you got to give them credit because, hey, they scheduled both. But you got to give Coastal Carolina and BYU some credit. Because they did schedule a game late notice. But they, like I said, there was a variety of just fun games in a week that was still really important from a national standpoint.
Yeah, I actually watched the whole BYU game. I actually I teased BYU and I bet them, and just because everyone I listened to in Vegas thought that BYU was going to just walk in there and roll through them. Like, there were coaches and people and all, anything from Vegas, I heard, well, BYU's got some NFL talent and Coastal don't. And the Coastal team and coach and players, they heard that shit too. And man, oh man, did you see a team who had a chip on their shoulder? Because, and again, I only played high school. I only played football up until like a couple years in high school. But I still remember in my middle school and high school football days that there's not a worse feeling to me as a football player than having a team run the ball down your damn throat the whole effing game. And that's pretty much what Coastal did. I mean, the differential of running and passing, and the announcer kept calling them like the Mighty Mites, and they're like, oh, the Coastal Carolina center is 5'9". They kind of kept joking about that, but dude, that Coastal Carolina O-line owned the shit out of BYU. I think we got to realize, hey, BYU is a good football team, because obviously it was a close game. Hell, it came down to 1 yard where it could have been a backbreaking, heartbreaking loss. But I think some of those numbers were inflated from BYU for playing weaker caliber opponents. And you saw BYU losing the trenches, because about the first, second quarter, oh, BYU's lines are so good. Well, BYU's offensive line got outplayed. BYU's defensive line got massively outplayed. BYU's wide receivers really let their quarterback down. I counted 4 drops in that game. Zach Wilson, the stud quarterback who was getting hyped up for Heisman, looked nervous the whole game. So, I give them a ton of credit for playing the game, like both teams. That was awesome to make a deal like that on a Thursday and play a game. But I got to give Coastal a lot of credit, because all the gamblers said BYU was going to roll. The spread was 10 points. And Coastal said, F this, dude. I don't care if we're the small name school here. But they smacked them in the mouth, and they dipped the whole game. They controlled momentum. They controlled the line of scrimmage. I believe Coastal actually ran the ball. I believe it was 52 running attempts, and they only had 17 passes.
Yeah.
I mean, how often do you see a disparity of, the quarterback was 10 of 15, and they ran the ball 54 times, and you won the game. That's just like, man up, dude, we're going to punch you in the mouth. And I think at the last play of the first half, it was a little bit dirty that the two guys were kind of beating up on the quarterback after he threw a pick. And I thought the ref probably should have thrown a flag there. But I think that was Coastal's way of saying, dude, like, we're just going to keep punching in the mouth. They're just going to keep going on and on. It was a chippy game. It was a fun game. Like, I hope the teams play again. I believe the both the ADs agreed that the Coastal will have to fly out to BYU in the next year or two just because kind of like a gentleman's deal there. But it was a fun game. A lot of credit to Coastal Carolina. They were an underdog story. They got the job done. It was fun to watch. But I think BYU just got a little exposed, Chris. I mean, they deserve credit. They've had a nice year. But this was the best team they've played. And a lot of stats they had that were really beautiful stats were knocked down a little bit because you for once played a team who was on your level. Yeah. And it got a little more realistic. And again, I don't think the BYU quarterback is that bad, but if you're a quarterback and you've had four or five drops, like, dude, I mean, you gotta get pissed. Like the BYU receivers were just trash. I normally don't pinpoint as many specifics about a game, but there was four passes where these were longer passes or fourth downs, and you can't have four drops in a game, Chris. I don't know what the statistic numbers are in a college football game, but normally you don't see four drops of passes that hit hands.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about that. I mean, the time of possession, too, 37-22, or basically 38-22. I mean, they had control of it, no doubt about it. And like you said, they only had to pass 15 times. And they just ran it down their throat. And, you know, like you said, it wasn't Wilson's best day as receivers. Definitely hurt him pretty much early on, too. But the pressure, man. And that is also the difference between the NFL and college. You can just get away with more stuff. It's kind of like a little bit more old school. They're still starting to get some of this helmet-to-helmet stuff where it's clearly a shoulder. You're starting to see that off the NFL leak into the college game, but not nearly as much. But, yeah, I mean, imagine doing that to, like, Tom Brady or something like that. Like, those guys have been thrown out of the game and fined and all sorts of stuff. But it was kind of like, hey, dude, part of that was legal, though, because there was, you know, the guys had the ball, so they could block them, and they just made it – they just turned it into way too much, you know. But that was, like you said, that, I mean, that was sending a message. That's exactly what that was, man.
And the only reason I said, should have you thrown a flag? I mean, I also bet a game where I took Utah at first half against Oregon State. And of course I lose the bet. Cause there was like on the drive, there was three calls against Utah and there was two roughing the passer calls. And for one of the roughing passer, the calls, and you've seen this happen a lot now in the NFL and colleges here, and it's really frustrating where you'll see an offensive lineman blocking a defensive lineman and hands go up in the air. And the defensive lineman who legit can't see through a body, like the defensive lineman's hand like glazes or touches the quarterback's helmet, and it's roughing the passer. It's like if linemen are blocking each other and a hand happens to go on the quarterback's helmet, that's an automatic 15 yards. Okay. But then if two guys like pile drive a quarterback for 10 seconds after the play, you know,
two separate times too.
Yeah. With all the calls we've seen this year, where if you're calling ticky tack, random hands tapping a helmet and you let that thing go. And you know, I don't know, but yeah. Oh, well, but yeah, that 94, he was proving his point for Coastal, and he came out in the second half and had a hell of a game on that DN line too. He had himself a hell of a day.
Yeah. No doubt about it. That was pretty. You're right, though. I mean, especially like in the NFL, you see a couple of fingers, touch a helmet. And it's like, dude, they're going for the ball. That's not hands to the actual face, like not as a weapon. You know what I mean? Like they really need to get some sort of, clarification on that stuff. Moving games here. Indiana come up with a big win. Over Wisconsin. Wisconsin had like a decent drive going and fumbled, which eventually turned into a long 12 play drive to get the lead 7-0. They responded with a field goal with a nice 12 play drive of their own but they couldn't really get a ton after that. They did get a field goal. They did have an interception. They did turn over on downs late. 14 play drive, 71 yards. That started at the frickin' Wisconsin 8. And, you know, on a 4th and 10, they had to, you know, they tried and tried. But that Tuttle coming off the bench throwing two tutties was pretty good. That was pretty good. And they didn't even have to rely on that Freifogel or whatever his name is. He only had one catch. But it was a grinded out game. But I got to say, like, I don't know how many COVID issues Wisconsin had for this game as far as people out. I'm sure Indiana had some too. Obviously, Wisconsin's been a little bit more touched up with that. Even if you go in, you know, in they never really had a training camp, but that time of the year, they had to shut down in that time frame. So I don't know how critical I can be of Wisconsin in that sense, but this is a big win for Indiana. And I really did like how all the players were stopping by to say, this is the best coach, we love you, coach, and all that. That was pretty dope. And the coach and the program are definitely on the rise, no doubt about it, there for Hoosierville.
And to go to Wisconsin, what the I mean, dude, you've scored 13 points in the last 120 minutes. Holy shit.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean,
it's not like Indiana has this, you know, top 10 defense or something, you know?
No, and Northwestern, I don't think their defense is a lockdown, like, you know, former Nebraska Blackshirt defense either. But, I mean, 13 points in two games. Like, and this is a team who normally has one of the best running programs in the whole country. Like, they always have running backs, and they always have a good old line. They always have a lineman going pro, normally in a first-round pick. And even if you don't, there's still no excuse. Like, again, I know that COVID has affected teams, but I there's a lot of other football teams in this country who are averaging more than 6 points a game. I don't know if the injuries have really become an issue, but even so, Chris, we're in a point now where, and we were talking about NFL before and college, or pretty much anytime, we're in a point now in football where offense has an advantage to some extent, whether it be play calls, reffing, just something. And I'm just blown away at Wisconsin. He was ranked 16th in the country. Who, again, who knows if they should be at that point or now, but I'm just really surprised to see those numbers, because these are numbers you maybe see from Akron, and we'll get to Akron later. those are Akron type numbers, but we're talking about a Wisconsin Badger football team who the first game of the year offensively, their quarterback was 24 for 25. So it surprises me. But again, tip my cap to Indiana. Dude, you've had a hell of a year. You had a miraculous comeback to Ohio State, came up a little bit short. You shook that off, bounced back. Now you beat Wisconsin. This really is a fun season that, despite the COVID years, like, Indiana football fans are just got to be enjoying every Saturday, and they should. A team like them doesn't get to have a season like this every year. So those Hoosier fans, I'm sure, are enjoying it as much as they can, and they've earned it. And a head coach is a pretty good symbol from what you said, the comments he gets as to why that program's going the right way.
Yeah, it was a cool moment anytime. And, you know, I'm sure the coach really appreciated that. And he's like, hey, you know, talk about recruiting and stuff. That one, I think it was like an offensive lineman. He's like, hey, recruits, go here and this, that, and the other. And obviously, now I will say this, it did look like there was a full on, there was some hand play pause at the end of the game on that fourth down. But it did look like the Hoosier cornerback had two hands clearly on, like, the arm grabbing it. So I understand that for some Badger fans, if you know, I'm going to bring that up because I think it's worth mentioning at least. However, you know, it is what it is. You know what I mean? I mean, that's how these things go. But yeah, I was impressed, man. I was impressed. You know what else I was impressed with, or at least, well, not shocked, but just like, what a year. A difference, or, you know, what a year can make in a difference. But in one half of the LSU Alabama game, Alabama put up 45 points, 7 for 7 scoring drives, 8 plays of 20 yards or more, 12.1 yards per play, and 45 points. I mean, that was, we thought it would be, you know, a beatdown, but 55-17. Ouch. That one hurt.
You think that Coach O regrets bringing in Bo Pelini? I mean, I know they've had people leave, but, and they've had their issues of COVID stuff too, but maybe he wasn't the best hire. I don't know. Again, who knows what it is, but it just, you know, Pelini, went to Kansas, had it open. I mean, I just, maybe he wasn't the best guy. And I mean, you got to imagine LSU, they must have loved their national title last year, but when you go from national title to this, I mean, I don't think they'd fire Coach O this year, but if he has another year or two like this, like, dude, you're going to be remembered for your ring. But, you know, this is an LSU team who, even though they couldn't win a title before, they were pretty much always a guaranteed on a regular non-COVID season to win 9 games a year. And now your defense is putting up stats that, you know, you're losing the DBU nickname really quickly.
Well, and yeah, I mean, he was usually winning 10 when the season was done too.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, right. I mean, I'll say this though. They had a record amount of juniors, and then they had like probably their best 3 players returning. All didn't even play a down. So,
true.
You know, either way, it was a smackdown. But yeah, I mean, you know, coaching does make a difference. No doubt about it. Miami's seen that on offense just from hiring a great, well, I can't say great, but a damn good, you know, offensive coordinator. Ohio State, we figured, you know, we wondered if it was going to be, are they really going to try to, you know, look pretty and do the showy show stuff and win by 40, 52-12. Clemson messed around with Virginia Tech for a little bit, ended up just stomping them 45-10. Syracuse, Notre Dame, 45-21. Auburn hung around against A&M. I got to give them some credit. Bo Ryan, that's what we're going with from now on. You know, he didn't win the game, but they, you know, they were in the game, 31-20 A&M. Tennessee actually said, hey, by the way, we do have like a college program, so we're going to hang with Florida for a while. And they did, 31-19. Iowa State just stomped West Virginia 42-6. That was pretty good. Miami rolled Oklahoma, grinded it out against Baylor. Like I said, TCU, Oklahoma State, that was a sizable upset to an extent. Anyway, Oklahoma State only had 2 losses. TCU had 4, but it did feel like those teams were a little bit closer than what was leading on. Marshall, ranked team, 21. They lose 20. Oregon lose. Washington lose. This top 25, you just don't know what to think of it anyway. But eventful, you know, Saturday, no doubt.
So 2 crazy things. First, Oklahoma State. So, you know, I mentioned this a couple of times. They had the super weird loss where they outgained Texas by 250 yards. They're like the 3rd team in 50 years to lose that game. They had a really like statistically insanely crazy loss to Texas. Against TCU, I don't know what the exact stat was, but they forced 5 turnovers and lost the game. I'm not an Oak State fan. I'm happy I'm not, because I mean, but this year, dude, I mean, imagine being an Oak State fan where your 2 losses, you massively outplayed a Texas team and had some weird turnovers and weird plays go against you. And this game, you're up 13-0. You force 5 turnovers and you lose the game. Chris, it's like the superstitious gods are not looking nicely upon Stillwater this year, because I mean, it's rare, and I'm struggling with words, because rarely in football does a team ever get 5 turnovers. You had your defense got the ball back 5 times for you, lost the game and blew a 13-point lead. They've had some really weird shit happen to them this year. I'm just going to say that. I don't know what gods or what Greek gods, Roman gods are against them, but they're having a lot of power. I don't know. It's some strange stuff going on, my friend. 5 turnovers. That should be like a 30-point win.
Yeah. No, you're right. And TCU on the flip side, Duggan last week was 3 of 12 or 3 of 11, but all 3 went for touchdowns, which was a crazy stat. He actually threw for 265 and ran for 100 and then had two 100-yard receivers too. So that was kind of like, whoa, okay, where the hell did that come from? But yeah, you're right. That that is kind of lining up to be like, wow, what the hell? I'll say this too. I'd say my co-host a little bit more, but we got to give some credit to the quarterback at Florida. We all, you know, we heard after week one, Mississippi State was going to tear up the league and throw all these touchdowns. But I guess it resides in Florida. He's now 38 touchdowns, most passing TDs through 9 games in FBS history. He's tied with Colt Brennan, and my guy Andre Ware in 1989 had 40. So slow down, everybody. But Kyle Trask, dude, I mean, you know, the dude, I'm not saying take him top 10, but he's putting up some numbers. I don't think we can, you know, say much about that. And it hasn't been pissed, like, because he hasn't been necessarily that great since, you know, that concussion.
I'll give him credit. Yeah, I know I've been ripping on him a little bit. Because at times this year where you listen to pregame coverage, people talk that he's like the Heisman candidate. And I mean, I guess when you do keep up with numbers like this, I'm not sure anyone's necessarily outplayed you yet. Obviously, Bama's going to have a voice in there, and Bama's quarterback and Trevor Lawrence is going to be represented too. But he does keep finding ways to put up great numbers, and the SEC is what he's been doing it against. So whether his opponents have been great teams or not, you know, you got to give him credit. You're right. They're offensively, they put together a hell of a year. Them and Bama should be actually a really fun SEC title game, because we do know, Chris, that as good as Bama's offense has been this year, Bama's defense isn't the regular type of Bama defense. So that over-under is probably going to be really damn high for a conference title game. But yeah, I will give credit to Kyle and the other Kyle, because that tight end has definitely made the quarterback's life a lot easier this year. But yeah, credit to Florida. They have played a lot of the shittier teams in the SEC this year. But when that happens, you need to beat those teams in front of you, and they've done that, Chris. So if he could put up a good game against Bama in the SEC title game, he could have the Heisman served on the platter to him then.
That's a good point. I never thought about that. And then we'll really get to see him in more of a pro setting, in a sense, too.
Well, and let me ask you, because this I always have that random take to start off the show, so it's a little bit delayed because we've been going for a bit, but. And just work with me here, but should there be a backup team for every conference title game? Because what are we going to do if, let's say, okay, so it's Bama, Florida, or Ohio State, Northwestern. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen in a conference title game if a COVID bug hits a team playing in a conference title game that week?
Oh, the week of. Yeah, I didn't really. You know what? That's a great question. I was like, what do you mean? Do we got 1 week left? But now it's just shaped it like that. That is a good point, dude. And like, what do you delay that? Like, that's an event.
Forfeit?
That's a good point. Yeah, I guess. And the thing is, in the Big Ten, for instance, everybody's going to, well, I shouldn't say everybody, but they're going to try to play because they set it in. So they had 8 regular season and everyone would get a 9th game. They call it championship week now. Just for this year.
That's a good point.
So I guess teams are going to be ready. They just won't be on the couch. But then again, so that team just gets screwed? That's a good point.
Yeah, let's say Clemson or Florida or Notre Dame. Like, if you get COVID in your championship conference week, what is the protocol? I guess you'd have to just give the other team the automatic win and not play a game. But I don't know. I hope that doesn't happen, but with as many games as we've seen canceled, it easily could. I don't know how you would handle a situation where, especially for the Final Four, the playoff spots and all that, and hell, conference championship, I don't know what the situation is, because you really cannot afford to wait a week either. So I hope it doesn't occur, but that hit me. I'm like, well, what's the backup plan if a team gets a COVID bug and can't play in a title game?
That's a great point. That's a really great point, man. I guess we're going to find out because they don't know either. They don't know either. And someone's going to be screwed because they're gonna be like, well, what about us? Who do we play then? You know,
true.
I mean, obviously it's different stakes, but still it's one, you know, I mean, it's still one, like an extra game. That's kind of interesting. Meanwhile, just to back up on Indiana a little bit, Indiana, this is coming from that Athletic. There's usually like the most interesting stats from college football of the week. And they are 3-0 against Penn State, Michigan, and Wisconsin this season. The Hoosiers were 3-57 in their previous 60 games against them. So kudos to the Hoosiers. We've talked about this squad a little bit this year. San Jose State is 5-0 for the first time since 1939.
Dude. Hell yeah.
That is crazy. And that 1939 San Jose State team went 13-0. They had 13 games back then. Wow, that's weird. And included Pop Warner on the staff as an advisor. That's pretty freaking crazy, man. Talk about throwing that thing back. But yeah, we were talking about BYU. They averaged 47.6 points per game coming in to that just shutdown game. That's pretty disgusting, man. That's pretty interesting, man. I didn't realize it was that long ago. I actually skimmed by that, not even know that was a thing. What was the other thing I was going to say? That TCU stat, just to back it up, that's the first time they had a 100-yard rusher and 200-yard receivers since 1996. So that was obviously a pretty big deal. My Gophers were out. My second team, Miami, they actually stomped. They had a bunch of dudes out, too. They had four eligible scholarship cornerbacks available for the game. So things could have went bad, but they didn't. They were playing Duke, and not Duke from about 3 or 4 years ago. They didn't need a miracle, you know, pitch eight times to beat Duke this time. 48-0 was the first shutout. First shutout in Hurricane history since 2001 National Championship squad. So you can really tell how long it's been. Unfortunately for my co-host, the USC Trojans took care of business right away.
Damn.
38-13 in the Sunday buffet. I mean, that was kind of nice. They ate. They are full. They're still full, dude. They can't even practice. Well, they wouldn't be practicing today because they played last night. But that was kind of funky to get that night game in there. Texas put up a bunch. You know, this is why I argued about the Texas offense. They just put up 69 points, but man, they can't do that against good teams unless it was overtime. Your point is still taken. Tulane beat Memphis. That was a good game, 35-21. A couple other good games. Anything else that you'd like to speak upon before we we got to talk about that, Dan, really quick. That freaking Louisiana, our Raging Cajuns snuck by. They're 9-1 now.
Holy shit.
24-21, though. But, dude, you know, we've seen, like, strategy before when, you know, we're going to take a safety, no big deal. But that doesn't get the other team within field goal range with time on the clock. But they had no other choice because I think on the first two snaps, I mean, these long snaps for a punt were just – way over the head, dude. I mean, like, not even close. Then I think dude messed up and had a two high snaps on extra points. And then a third one later in the game to the point where they literally said, you know what? We'll just take our chances. We're going to run 30 yards back, take the safety, just so we can punt and not have to worry about, a snap coming to you. And still, that game came down to the wire, 23-21. They had a chance to win the game or tie it.
I don't care what the coach says. I some days do believe that I have a better football mind with my middle school experience than he did. Because after the game, and they won, luckily, because they blocked the kick, which was actually like a 34-yard kick, which App State easily could have made to force overtime. But yeah, as Chris said, there were plenty of issues with the long snap for punting. So here would have been my idea. Because so to go to the situation quickly, which is really rare, you almost never see this. The Raging Cajuns had to punt. They're on about their own 35-ish, and they're up five with about 2 minutes to go. So he decided to run backwards and take a safety to go up three, then give the ball back. My idea, which I think would have been the best idea to do, is you put a quarterback in shotgun, pretend to fake to the team like you're going for it, and then have him do a little pooch punt.
Yeah, like Randall Cunningham used to do that a fair amount.
Yeah, get the ball 30 to 40 yards down the field. But sure. The coach like, well, yeah, I was looking at my options. That was the best call we had to make here. I don't want people giving me grief because that was the decision we had to go for. Well, no, dude, you made it a 3-point game, and if that kick isn't blocked, you're in overtime. You can easily lose. Or, I mean, realistically, why not just go for it on 4th and 10? Like, I don't think you can.
I think that's a worse option, the 4th and 10. To be honest with you, well, I don't know about worse, but I don't know about that. But I agree with the punt thing, and maybe they could have done that earlier in the game too, you know?
Well, the only reason I'd say you go for on 4th and 10 is because you're up five. When you make it a 3-point game.
No, that's fair. That's fair. That's why I kind of hesitated. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think you put him in shotgun, convince the defense you're going for it. And again, if your quarterback can't do a pooch punt, little drop kick, then he shouldn't be a D1 college quarterback on a top ranked team, you know? So I didn't think that was smart. Again, I'm happy they won, but App State was kicking about a 34-yard chip shot field goal. Thankfully, the guy got in and blocked it, or it was horribly miskicked. It was one or the other, but they held on. Yes,
that was a wild game, dude. I couldn't believe it. And then the thing that got me, and this is coaching too. Hey, dude, don't sit under this tent because it's raining. I want you to go snap right now. Why wouldn't you be on the sideline snapping? I don't understand that. Like, wouldn't you just want to do that? Like, just to get it out of your system? Like, he's under the, you know, people are like huddling up by him and saying, hey, man, it's okay. And I appreciate that. But I see him, they go to this shot and he's under this tent because it's raining. It's like, dude, go put in 10 minutes or something on snapping, dude. If it's windy or whatever you want to say, that's another thing. I was like, dude, what are you doing, man? Don't just sit there with your head down kicking rocks. Go practice this shit right now. I bet you it can't be any worse by practicing it, you know?
I completely agree. I don't know. That is one of the – I've seen a lot of weird stuff happen in all my years of sports, especially with gambling on them. I've never seen a – well, it's weird too because I texted my buddies. I was watching the game because I was just going to watch and bet on it. And I remember in the first long snap of the game, it went way over his head. And they were able to, I think, get a safety, you know, because it was close. Yeah. They got a safety.
Actually got all mixed up early. Now that I think about it, it was all mixed up because it looked like a touchdown. Then it wasn't because of penalty, then this, then that.
Oh, yeah. But so basically, in the first quarter, he had two awful snaps, and they both led to points for the other team.
And horrendous, too. Like, really bad. Not just a little low or a little off. I mean, like, where are you snapping these, dude?
Yeah, so if you look at the score, to give actually the Raging Cajuns, their defense played phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Like, out of all those points scored, they're really probably responsible maybe for just one touchdown, even. So, yeah, credit to our boys, though. I think we've been a proud supporter of the Raging Cajuns now for about 7 or 8 years at least. I think we're going to have another little small child, a little adopted team of the San Jose State Spartans. So we're adding to the family. I think I'm going to add to our family of football love here. So, yeah. But, yeah, hey, dude, they got it done. And, Chris, you know, it's going to be a really fun, badass game to watch is the Raging Cajuns against Coastal Carolina for a Sun Belt title. That's going to be a good-ass football game. That's going to be a lot of fun to watch. It's not Bama, LSU, or Ohio State, Michigan, whatever, Big Ten. But, dude, that's going to be a good-ass football game to see. And
I don't think I'll be able to sleep the night before, dude.
And if you're Coastal Carolina, you could be continuing a undefeated year. And you could be a single-digit ranking next to your team to finish the year. And whoever would have thought that?
Yeah, no doubt about it. On to week 15 as we hit the 40-minute mark of the pod. Friday, there is some interesting and meaningful games. I mean, Utah-Colorado is not necessarily meaningful unless you're Colorado. And some people are saying, well, hold on, dude. You know, I actually saw this writer. I don't know if he's, like, based out of Colorado or not, or if he's just trying to pump stuff up. And this dude, Stuart Mandel, said, unbelievable. It says basically Pac-12 won't adjust protocol to allow undefeated Colorado in the championship ahead of a one- or loss, two-loss North team. That's what he said. And this dude's like, or this is what, you know, it came out. And to a tweet, he said, unbelievable. Undefeated USC would beat out undefeated Colorado because it had to cancel the game against each other. What do you think about that angle? They didn't actually play on the field. Is that kind of an interesting angle if both of them, because they both have another game? Well, what do you think about that? I mean, do you change the protocol because of that? But then we kind of – that's the game that we didn't get to decide. How fair is that to the other side, though, you know?
Yeah, Jesus.
Suppose nothing's fair this year.
No. Oh, shit, yeah. But
– and they don't have a big win either, though. So they don't have a big win either now that I look at their schedule. So it's not like they beat Oregon or something.
So simply due to the fact that USC's had a one less game canceled, gives them the edge over the Buffaloes?
Well, basically, this guy wanted them to tweak the whole thing and just have, if they both win, have USC and Colorado in the conference final because they're both undefeated rather than a two or one loss team from the other side. That's what this guy's
Oh, about. Well, hell, well, I get it's 2020, but dude.
And the game got canceled, so they didn't get a chance. So I don't know. It'd be different. It'd be a better argument if they had a bigger win, like they beat one of those top teams. I think that would help on the other side.
Yeah, I get that they're okay, and that keeps one of those teams undefeated, but still, like, I don't buy that. And yeah, because then what's that say to Washington? Like, you can't be. Yeah, I don't know. I can't get into that. I do know that despite how much I can't stand Clay Helton, if we do win out and we win the Pac-12 championship, the way this looks this year, we easily could, or well, not easily, potentially could, the USC could be a Final Four team. Like, oh, you know, we're not really getting there yet, talking about it much, but if these wins keep happening and they win the Pac-12, all of a sudden you'd have an undefeated USC team.
And when we say keep happening, it's really just one more week and then we're in it. So yeah. It's two more weeks to do it. And Washington would be, as long as Washington wins, that's who they'd go against.
Yeah, and now all of a sudden you'd have an undefeated USC team competing against a one-loss Florida or Auburn or A&M or like or what? Not sorry, not Auburn. That was massively a poor understatement. Fucking
lack of head-to-head. So we're not going to have Florida, but you never know.
Yeah. So again, the USC has a chance. God, it would be so weird for USC to make the Final Four into 2020. That would be so typical. Anyways, but yeah, it could happen. So yeah. But no, I disagree with that. I think that you'd be setting a precedent that, like, you know, well, so what's the point of having the North? Yeah, I can't go with that.
Like, if you beat Washington, then you could say, well, dude, we already beat them and they've already lost the game. Well, okay. Then you have the point. But I don't know. When's the last time, though, like I said at the top of the show, that Michigan was a 29-point underdog to Ohio State going into that game?
It's got to be a super long time, brother. A super, super long time since that's been the case. But is there any reason it shouldn't be that big of a spread? Let me ask you that.
No. No, it shouldn't be. Yeah. Nope. I'm not shocked by it. I will say maybe the rivalry it'll be 26 points or something like that, you know, but yeah, I mean, and we know Ohio State's got to look pretty, so they're going to be wanting to blow out people. But yeah, you're right. It shouldn't be. It's not, it's just so crazy to go by the game and we're not going to really break it down. Speaking of a game, though, that we can break down, and I suppose Oregon still has a chance, don't they? Because the Oregon and Washington play. I didn't think about that. That Wisconsin-Iowa game, I think just from it may not mean a whole lot. It is an interesting game as far as a hardcore fan to watch a tight game. Cincinnati at number 24, Tulsa. Their only loss was a grinded-out game, Tulsa, at the beginning of the year to Oklahoma State. They obviously can't keep up with the offense of Cincinnati. Not a whole lot can. They're only averaging 27 compared to 41. But they got a steady defense. They're a good team. They've been on, they've had some close games that they've managed to get by SMU, get by Tulane in double overtime. What says you about this year matchup? It could be an interesting one, and Tulsa comes in loosey-goosey because they're just going to probably have to play him in the next week in the conference final. And funny enough, this has happened a couple of times. I remember it happened in the Mountain West a couple of years back, too, where you play back-to-back games. What do you think? I mean, obviously Cincinnati needs to look pretty good in this game so they can have some sort of argument, because there are people that are going to lose. I think, we may have a big mess if Florida beats Alabama, but what do you think about this? They are, 12.5 point favorite.
I've recalled this a couple times, and I know that it's always interesting. I think it was with the Boise State last year, or a couple years ago, of the game plans. Like, if the coaches know this, like, will it strategically, do you have like a conservative vanilla game plan and then have different tricks for the second game? Or, I mean, do you go all out with the regular? Because so much of college football, as you and I know, and NFL or shit, even high school, is watching film, adjusting, and then, moving on. But you're now going to be watching film and playing the same team again. And do you want to have a different strategy? Like, it's such a rare sight in football where you almost never see it.
Yeah.
Especially in the NFL. I suppose you could in the NFL if a week 17 game led to a playoff game, but even that's rare. It's just such an odd anomaly because every adjustment you're going to see from the game, you're going to have to, are you going to make a whole new game plan script? So I'm intrigued a lot just simply from coaching, Chris. I think we'll truly see. I think a coaching staff for this scenario matters way more than a regular game. Because if this was just Cincinnati Tulsa for one game, hell, it could be a great game. Tulsa has been a shitty first half team this year, but they've had great second halves and they have a decent defense with an okay quarterback playing against a Cincy team who we've bragged about plenty, whose defense is legit. So if you're Tulsa, what is your plan to attack? And if you're Cincinnati, what are you showing them on offense? Because you're going to have to go back in. So, yeah, I think the strategy standpoint makes it difficult for Cincinnati to win two games in a row, which clearly they need to do to remain in their hunt for their miracle spot.
But and again, they can't mess around with – they got to lay it out on the line on the first game. And they got to win it,
Yeah.
And by the way, last year this happened in the conference, Cincy against Memphis. And since he lost back to back 34-24, and then in the championship game, Ritter had 233 through the air and a 113. They still lost 29-24. And also, I totally forgot about this, but this is why a lot of the national argument, the people have been on the Ohio State side, not just for talent and all that, but last year these two teams faced and Cincinnati beat them. Ohio State beat them 42-0. So I forgot that now that I'm looking at the that's why I kept thinking, why? Oh, yeah, okay. But they actually went through this exact same scenario, and maybe they did hold back in that first game. And maybe they didn't. But either way, it really doesn't matter because, like you said, they got to keep that spot.
Yeah, and I think from what I've seen from these teams this year, I do think that Cincinnati's defense is going to contain Tulsa. Tulsa has been, like I said, a really slow first half team, and offensively they're not that gifted, but they're an all-around respectable good team who has a good defense, but I don't think they're going to be able to do a whole lot offensively. And I just think Cincinnati's defense is the X factor. And again, I've been massively surprised with the progression that Ridder's made this year as a mobile quarterback. He's never going to be a great passer like a certain star quarterback in the NFL, but for college, he's done so much with his feet that it opens up passing lanes. So yeah, I'll take Cincinnati to win. I don't know if they cover. 12.5 is a lot of points for a close game, but I think they win. And then again, then it's just back to which coach has a greater team in mind in place, and then credit to that coach if they can pull off the second game.
It is a weird situation. At least they've been in it last year, and they won't get complacent more than likely, even if they win, because the coach can literally go, yeah, but we lost last year back to back. So they're going to be looking to, you know, it's weird to play the same squad back to back in the situation Cincinnati's in, not just for the conference, but for the actual spot. Here's an interesting game. Miami in North Kakalaka. North Carolina puts up more points. Miami has a tad better defense. Hopefully Miami gets some players back in general. They're missing like 20 players from COVID because they had to shut down for 2 weeks. One thing, North Carolina, we know they can air it out. I mean, 315, 316 through the air, which is a lot. By the way, Tulsa just, I don't think they have the run defense. I'm with you on that. I got Cincinnati. I'm not sure about the spread either. I may leave that alone. I think Tulsa could actually sneak under it, but I don't think they have the run defense to stop them this year. But this is an interesting game because, like I said, 316 through the air is great. But North Carolina also runs for 218 a game. So, you know, and they lost to Virginia, who's an okay club. They're not that great, 44-41. That Notre Dame game was competitive, and North Carolina got off to a good start. They're going to have to get off to a good start in this game against my Canes.
Yeah, I was surprised with how well Notre Dame contained North Carolina's offense, just because North Carolina's offense really had done pretty well against almost anyone this year. So I think that maybe Carolina was a little overhyped going into that game. But then I do recall back about a month ago when I did make a bet on a Miami game where I bet them against or bet on a Louisville game with Miami. And there were points coming down that field like religiously. So if Louisville's offense can move up and down the field on Miami, because Miami has some tackling problems, I believe is at linebacker, I think North Carolina is going to do the same, but I do think that Miami's offense can go toe for toe, and Miami's defense, I think, is probably overall stronger. I mean, I think this is just going to be a fun offensive game, but I do think Miami's just a better team. I think they've just had a more solid collective amount of wins this year, Chris, and I think, again, obviously the defense can't put a performance like that against Louisville, but I just think that they'll be able to score enough, make enough plays, and be able to pull out the victory. I haven't seen a whole lot of your Hurricanes play, so I'm basing that victory more so off what I've seen from Tar Heels. So I'll give your Hurricanes the edge.
Yeah, I think they'll win, but I think that 3-point spread is actually pretty on board. I think this game will be still on the table for either team in the closing minutes, let's say. You look at Iowa, Wisconsin. Are we going to break that down? Well, you know, at this point, we don't necessarily need to detail it, but Iowa is favored by 1. That probably will be a grinded out game. Washington and Oregon, basically to go to the Pac-12 championship. That could be a good game. Oregon's lost back-to-back, and they're still the 6-point favorite. USC and UCLA. UCLA coming off a decent win. They got a quarterback that's starting to turn the page. USC only a 3-point favorite. And by the way, I think there's only 8 games postponed or canceled right now. Of course, it's Monday, of course, as we know. So that could mean 17. But there are a variety of good games on the docket. USC, UCLA, what do you think, man? You think that 3-point stuff is just child's play and they're going to win by 20 or what?
I think that this USC, I think the USC offense is going really good this year. Graham Harrell's been calling a good game. Slovis has been having a really nice season. I think UCLA has played some teams that are not that well. Hell, USC hasn't played anyone good either. I'm taking USC. I just think that they're trending really well, and they're playing with some swagger like they like to. That for last night, they scored 28 points in the first half just off turnovers, hustle, and just it was an overall collective strong game. So I'm sure they're going to lose now. Like, I'm for once kind of buying back in. I'm sure I'll start off next week saying screw Clay Helton, this team's a joke, but I'll pick them to win. I hope they do run the table in the Pac-12 and make the conference title game. So I think they win just from reports I've heard. UCLA is not that good this year, and they think they're overrated. So I'm going to go with reports I've heard and my hot team and pick USC to get the dub.
All right. This I'm just saying, I don't, you know, everything's looking great, but then stuff happens.
Oh, I know.
San Jose State, I just can't say it. 5-0 favorite, 2.5 point favorite over Nevada. That could be a very interesting one there. Houston, Memphis, who cares on the long run? But Houston, who's 3-3, is a 4-point favorite over Memphis. So, like I said, this is more of the hardcore barn burner. I'm not quite ready to pick Akron over Buffalo as a 32-point underdog, but I'm eyeing it. Just kidding. Look at who Arkansas State is playing this week, and then tell me what the hell is going on. And it's too bad Arkansas State has – I wish they had like one or two losses because we could just run with that as the crappiest game of the week, which is kind of pretty crazy. There was another game. Well, Virginia Tech, another game that I'm talking about where it's going to be fun to watch. If you're bored, you want to watch a competitive game, that'll be the case. Anything else that stands out on the schedule but besides the game I told you about, Arkansas State? Incarnate Jeez. Ward. I mean, what the hell is that? It's a bird. It's a cardinal. But I mean, what? I don't even know. What am I? It says Southland. They're in the Southland. They haven't played yet. They're second in the Southland, but they haven't played. How are you second in the Southland, but you haven't played? Is there only two people in the damn thing? I don't know. That just threw me off, dude. That threw me off. I guess, do I remember this from? I'm just lost. Who the hell is that? Yeah, they played a full schedule last year. So I guess I just haven't seen that, dude.
I've seen their name pop up for some basketball, but I've never seen that. I didn't know they had a football team.
They're second in the Southland, dude.
Jesus Christ, what a joke.
Oh, Southland Oxford. 2021 allows fall non-conference. There we go. So they're just like, screw it. We're not going to play. We might as well get, you know, but you can play non-conference games early. So that's what it is. Okay. All right. I think it's about time to shut this puppy down unless there's other, you know, games that you want to say, hey, check that game out or whatever.
No, I would just love – I always – every year I always love watching – Missouri play Georgia, and then I hate it when the game's over. Mizzou had a nice comeback win this last week against Arkansas. I would love to start off next week talking about Missouri beating Georgia. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I would love to see the Tigers black and gold win in Columbia against Georgia because Georgia's eighth. Screw that. Go
Mizzou. Bulldogs got nothing to play for, man. They may have their heads down kicking rocks.
It's possible. I would love a Mizzou because Mizzou is this is the most optimistic I've met with them in about four to five years. They've had a nice season with a freshman quarterback, new coach. Like things are looking up there, so it'd be nice to have a little sneaky victory against Georgia, who normally has their number. But yes, besides that, is that time of the week again to the crappy pick of the week. We're now officially 9-3 on the season. Last week, we took Akron, who by many's account is in the last couple of years has been the worst team in football, the worst Division One football team.
Buck 23, 123 teams,
and dead last.
What did your boy do though? That didn't scare him away.
No, no, no. He said, you know what? I see the numbers. I see the trends. I'm not sure what the trends were.
Yeah, that I don't know that either,
saw. But... he might have been having some dank when he was making that pick. I'm not gonna make assumptions, but might have been some good stuff going on in the background. He went with them, and miraculously, I think the rumor circulated across the country, and the good old Akron Zips, who I believe last year went 0-for, and this year were on a pace to go 0-for because they now play Buffalo, got a 31-3 win. It was one day for an Akron fan who, God forbid, COVID sucks for everyone. If you're an Akron alum, you've had not much to cheer for in the past couple of years of football. There must have been so much fist pumping, beer drinking. I'm sure some steak dinners were ordered. What a victory.
LeBron was happy.
LeBron was ecstatic. I mean, J.R. Smith was happy for LeBron. And I'm sure they were smoking. Those boys got to be smoking some good kush because NBA is not testing marijuana this year. I mean, you know, there's all sorts of happiness going on there.
Father-son bonding, baby, him and Bronny.
Amen. Amen. And, you know, if you ever see J.R. Smith's car, I wouldn't go near it because he's going to chase you out without a shirt on and whoop your ass. So,
look at it, dude. Don't even look at yourself in the mirror or in the window.
So, mainly, shout out to J.R. Smith for the Akron victory. That's where I want to go there. Oh, God, the Bowling Green passer had a better passing line than Akron. Oh, my God. Holy shit. Akron's quarterback, who won the game 31-3, was 9 of 17 for 87 yards.
Yes, sir.
Good Lord. You know, Chris, they call that he's a game manager.
Game manager,
a game manager, because
they've been missing all these games. They needed to manage the game, dude. Just manage it.
They ran the ball 39 times for 195 yards. That's like, you should have over 200 yards. They did have a blocked punt touchdown. It was special teams. Everybody circled the wagon, Chris. That was a effing team victory. Good for them. Go Zips. Go LeBron. Go J.R. Smith. Moving on. So this year, for these games, we normally pick like the shitty conferences, like the South End Conference, right. Like all these like no name conferences. But so far this year, we've done the SEC, we've done the Big Ten, and we're gonna wrap back around to another big conference. Chris, would you like to guess what big conference? Oh, we've done the Big 12 too.
Big 12.
What's another big conference we've not hit yet this year, sir?
Pac 12.
Wrong. Guess again.
Big conference?
Yeah.
ACC.
There's a yes, baby. Damn straight. Yeah, baby. There's only one left.
ACC.
we're now walking into the backyard of the Miami Hurricanes now that are not involved in this game. But we're going ACC land with my Tar Heels, all the good old ACC boys. And this game deserves to be it. We're going to Doak Campbell Stadium. Good old Tallahassee, Florida, where people go to party and maybe graduate. The Duke Blue Devils are
they don't go there for football anymore. I'll tell you that. No.
the Duke Blue Devils are 2-8 this year, 1-8 in conference. Who would ever thought when Danny Dimes left there that there would be such a drop off after the man it's evaporated. And, you know, Florida State, 2-6 in the year, 1-6 in conference. So these teams have played a combined 17 conference games and have two combined effing wins. it's on the ACC network. Oh, how Florida State has dropped. With my co-host being a Hurricanes fan, I know he's shed a couple of tears getting ready to talk about this one. But we're on ACC network. 3 p.m. Central Time. I'm sure it's probably ESPN Plus, maybe two. Take it away, my friend. We've now hit out. I got to finish next week with the Pac-12 game because we've hit almost every major conference. But we're still in our lane of the highway. We're not crossing lanes. We're not ignoring our blinker. Uh-huh. we're finding shitty games, and this is another one for you to enjoy, my friend. Go ahead.
I mean, they've all been legit shitty games. They just have. I mean, they fit the description. It's nothing against these basketball schools. but, you know, I mean, that's what Florida State is right now. Tickets start as low as $14 to get into that dope Campbell Stadium, which is pretty funky considering they're not going to go full board. I don't know if they could sell it out right now anyway, even if they just gave them away. But you're right. I mean, both teams, 22 and 24 points is not a lot in college football when you put that up. But when you both are giving up 36.
Unless you're the Badgers.
Right. But if you're both giving up 36, that's an instant qualification for crappy, crafty pick of the week when you give up that kind of crap. Neither of them can stop the run. 202 for Duke and a 193. Dude, that's a lot of rushing yards to give up. Florida State will give you up through the air as well a little bit more. Yeah, this is a crappy game. This is a crappy game. Wow. Man. Yeah, this is – I mean, Duke did win recently against the Charlotte 49ers. So, I mean, that looks – that's like a non-conference just play your second string type basketball stuff. You know, as much as I don't like it, I do love me some Charlie Ward and Deion Sanders. Don't get me wrong. And I love me some Dalvin Cook, and he's from Florida State. So I'm not a Florida State hater just because Miami is the squad. But I'm going. You're not just going to walk in for 15. Did I say 15 or 14? Because I swear to God, the tickets just dropped.
14.
Okay, 14. I was like, wait a second. It says 14 now. So, you know, for $14, if you think you're going to just walk on into Doak Campbell and take care of these Seminoles, the Seminoles have been more competitive. That Notre Dame game stood out to me. And actually, North Carolina did have a bunch of people out, but they actually somehow, some way beat North Carolina. But I do know North Carolina had a grip of people out. But, you know, it is what it is. COVID. Both 2-8. So I'm going the Florida State Seminoles to get the job done against the Blue Devils, sir.
And as we've done this year, I like to wrap it up with a battle of alumni.
Oh, I kind of messed that up. My bad.
No, but with this, I can't. We're not naming any alumni of sports, because if we're doing alumni off sports, I would automatically never fucking pick Duke because they have JJ F and Redick and God knows how many other players. I can't say. So I'm going to name people from these universities who had no athletic ties, no sports at all. So starting off with Duke, there's the first name on Google is David Rubenstein, who is an American billionaire and a philanthropist. Okay. So some white collar dude from Duke, big deal, whatever. Ken Jeong, who is a famous actor, a man named Dan O'Reilly, who is a blogger. My God, this is such a white collar-ish. There's a lot of shady looking people on this Duke website, I must say. I'm not really buying into it. All right, that's enough for Duke. Hold on. do we have another adult film star from Duke? Yes, Bella Knox, who has been in many classic movies since 2014. You may have
heard
seen
she's a good writer too. She produces.
Yeah, I heard the plots are intriguing. So, all right. Moving on to Florida State again. Not naming athletes. Okay, Jim Morrison. Okay, that's a singer. That's good.
I mean, he might as well just stop right there.
Richard Simmons. Okay.
I'll let you go. I'm pretty sure I know another one.
Cheryl Hines, comedian. I don't recognize her name, but she's like number three there. A bunch of other people. Faye Dunaway.
Burt Reynolds.
Oh, yeah.
Did Burt Reynolds go there?
I think so. Lee Corso.
Okay.
Gabrielle Reese is, I believe, an Olympian volleyball player. Olympic soccer player. I don't know if he actually played sports there. So I'm going to name drop him, good old Randy Moss. I think he went there and got kicked out. So I'm going to fit in my boy Randy.
Yeah, he didn't
get
to play, but he just dominated like on the practice squad.
We have a attractive lady named Michelle McCool, who is a former WWF wrestler. And that about does it. Oh, Bert Kreischer is a comedian. I enjoy his stuff. He's a pretty good stand-up dude. Jake Owens, country singer. All right. So, Bert Reynolds is on the fourth page.
Oh, wow. Bert should be top tier, dude.
Yeah. He is five picks away from being the last person on Google. He's in between a lady named Amanda Cerny and Sean Gilmartin. Amanda Cerny is known for an Instagram model. She got 25 million followers. And the other person next to him has a AAA baseball hat on. What a slap in the face, the good old Burt Reynolds. Jesus. So with that being said, Florida State wins 5 out of 5 times for alumni battles. The end.
Yeah, no matter how you want to dice it up, they win.
Because if we were to go sports and compare Duke to Florida State, J.J. Redick in primetime, that ain't even. Peter Warwick against Carlos Boozer, that ain't a matchup.
And so you can get some free shoes, too, with Warwick, which is a better deal.
So on that note, we're wrapping up another week, another safe week for the both of us. I know we, unfortunately, we had a football coach at a school in my basketball conference. So a school that's like 30 minutes from me, a football coach actually near me passed away from COVID. So, I heard from one of my coaches that a coach had it for about 2 weeks and the symptoms got to him. I'm not sure if he'd had previous health concerns before, but obviously a coach who's devoted, especially this school year, to coaching young men to play football. That's not how things are supposed to go. So, keep trying to stay safe. I know things are hopefully looking better with the vaccine, but keep wearing a mask, keep staying safe. Hopefully we can all enjoy a safe Christmas with our loved ones. I think everyone needs that this year. And then the calendar is going to switch here pretty soon. So enjoy this podcast when you're driving to work, working out, maybe just laying in bed with SportsCenter on. Until then, Chris and I'll be back next week. Go Raging Cajuns. Go Spartans, our new adopted team. And go Coastal Carolina. They deserve a shout out for what they did last week. We're out tonight. Peace.